the most exciting thing you can start a show with.
Coming live from the 2SER studios.
This is a great show.
Across the park, 2SER.
And just go for a swim, but like deep.
Come on in, meatball.
Testicles.
Pointy at the doggy.
Gummy more. <mobile.
laughs> Pretty awesome.
Yeah, no worries, I have good footy.
Which part of that was
good? The real problem with that.
Bloody.
Never walk alone.
I can stand the prick.
Oh, bloody bird.
Let's not do this.
Oh, the corner injury. She got a corner injury.
Hello and welcome to Across the Park, a wrap-up program about last week's episode of Across the Park. Tonight we will be discussing how we wrapped up the following week's show, as well as what was wrapped up on the show before that. It really is riveting. My name is Joel Kasem, and I am the only one who will be introducing my co-hosts. But first, a message from our sponsors. Wait, what? Oh, we don't have any. Never mind. First up, the woman who is now on a first-name basis with all the GPs in Sydney, it's Gabby Morris.
Hello. I
welcome
actually
back.
Am.
I bet you are.
Yeah.
I went
Sandra,
to the doctors this afternoon and they
Michael,
said, say hi to Gab.
I'm also dating a doctor. So
of course.
It's handy. Yeah.
Very handy. Ooh.
Does that mean you don't have to pay to see doctors because you can just see the person in your house?
No, I actually think you're not allowed. It's a breach of law. I mean, a breach of doctor law.
Really?
I don't think that you can get treated by your spouse or partner if they are a doctor unless it's like a bit of role play.
Oh, doctors and nurses.
And I'm winking. I'll take
okay.
that script.
Wink emoji.
yeah, right, there you go.
All right. No, neither did I. Thank you.
I don't know if that's fact, so should I get her in?
Go on. You can go ask her while I introduce Nick.
As if it wouldn't happen, though. Like, you know, obviously your partner, if they're a doctor, they're going to diagnose you. I mean, if it's something they can't do, then
well,
you go somewhere
on,
else.
We'll find out.
Oh, but maybe they can't refer you, like, and they can't write medical certificates
as a doctor, and if I'm dating you and you're a doctor, can you treat me? It's a hard no. Can you treat me? That's a wink. Nope. She can't.
Still not. I've got a headache.
There we go. Right. All right.
Okay. There you go. Well, there you go. Also joining us. No, go on.
No, that was it. That was fun. See you guys.
Bye. Also joining us is a man who will no doubt say it was a forward pass. It's Mick Radical.
So forward. I mean, come on. Every angle told it was forward.
Gabby, thoughts?
Oh, it was backwards.
What? What are you talking about, Gab? It was clearly forward.
Everyone who wasn't a Parramatta fan said it was definitely
backwards. I think we need to just move forward in 2020.
Move forward past.
Actually. Move forward. Mick, can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Where are you right now?
I'm in a bedroom. My spare bedroom at the house.
It's a weird brothel situation.
Well, like, okay.
Go on, please.
Here's what's happening. I'm going on holiday. So when this goes to air, I will be in Byron Bay. And the bed behind me, I've made up very nicely with a washer and a towel for our good friend T, who's going to be looking after my cat for the next week.
T, friend of the show, who loves
the
house
set. Tarina Tata is going to be looking after this cat that's on my lap right now. And I've made the room up nice and tidy for her.
I feel sorry for her.
What? Why? It's a beautiful place.
Yeah. What I'm saying isn't giving it justice.
I don't know. I think it's kind of sweet that you put a little towel and a little – is it a hand towel? Did you say that?
Was
it
yeah.
It looks –
a washer.
Yeah.
Washer.
No, that's sweet. You put a little chocolate on her pillow.
Yes.
Can do that too. Yeah. I just was thinking the pillows behind me make me look like I got like horns or something coming out.
Yeah, it does look strange.
I don't know why I've got two banana pillows. I mean, he uses those anyway.
They kind of look like, that's what I mean. Like they have the vibe of like a weird sex position pillow or something, you know? And then the towels on the bed, it's just like all giving me creepy vibes.
Well, you haven't seen the chains and stuff.
Exactly, on the wall. They're just off.
There's a swing just out of frame there. Oh, well, T's going to have a wonderful
time. I never
really
understood sex swings. Like, it just seems like, sorry. Oh, well, here we've gone. Here we are.
Here we go. All right, let's go. This is this episode.
It seems like a lot of effort.
I'm sure it is. Firstly, I mean, before any sort of sexual activity, how do you get it into the roof?
What do you mean? You just drill
it
in.
An air tasker.
I mean, are they, how stable is your ceiling? Or do you, I mean, obviously you have to put it into something. There must be some sort of beam that goes across. Then you've got to do all that. Yeah, they're going to be asking questions.
Like solid foundations. And feel like, yeah, I think it would be better outdoors. It's a bit safer.
Then you're outdoors,
just a normal swing.
You just need a sex swing on a tree. Yeah, it's just a normal swing. Maybe I just want a normal swing. I asked during isolation if I could get a swing to Rosie, my girlfriend. She said, no, it's way too dangerous and that I'd probably injure myself and then it's going to be a burden on the medical system. And I was like, far out. Crush my dreams.
Not a
swing. Who do you think I am?
Did you ever do like big swings and then jump off at the end?
Yes.
That's how you hurt yourself.
Yeah.
Gab, where are you tonight? Anyway. Because this looks different. You've got a different background. I can see a few surfboards.
I have been moving down the coast back to the city life. I am home.
You're home?
Yes, okay. At my parents' place. Had a bit of a meltdown as soon as I got back to the city, not going to lie. It was pretty overwhelming. But things are getting more adjusted, let's say. Yes. That's one way of putting it.
We're all adjusting back to some sort of normal life, which is what we used to have, right? Normal life.
I think it's called reverse shock. Reverse
Stockholm syndrome.
Like where you've, it's like, I was reading an article about it, but yeah, we'll see. Maybe
I'm just
a gal about the paddock, you know? Not a gal about town anymore.
I don't think you are, yeah.
Country cowgirl. Or a beach cowgirl. Girl.
Bit of both. Love it.
Mm. I've always said that's what I want my retirement to be, is me, not a cowgirl, but if
I've always said I wanted a girlfriend. That's a cowgirl.
I've been telling anyone who listened that I just want a girlfriend and friends.
We know that.
If I ever get to retire, that I would want to live on a farm and have a horse and just ride my horse into town with my little hat. Like, tipping it at everyone.
Here comes this bloody city idiot
clop,
riding
clip,
his horse.
Clip, clop, clop, clop.
Clip, clop, clip,
clop. It's a German horse. Don't ruin my dreams, guys.
Sorry, I know about that. I shouldn't. Yeah, that sounds good, Joel. Can't wait.
All right. Let's get on with the show.
Sure.
Firstly, a bit of content. I would like to take this time to remind people that we have an Instagram page. Mm. I don't think we used it last week. That's okay. It is there.
My bad.
I wasn't blaming anyone, Gabby. But we have an Instagram page. It's at Across the Park. Could
it
be
is.
Wrong.
It is.
Isn't there underscores? Underscores in there?
Yeah,
there's probably underscores in there.
Throw a few underscores in there, but that's all right. It's Across.
Yep.
ACROSS underscore the.
Yep.
Underscore Park. PARK. Yep. It's a great place. I highly recommend visiting it, checking out the hot Connie, as they say.
Okay. There. Yep. I haven't heard that.
Yep. haven't heard that one.
But check out our hot Connie for sure.
Slinging tent. I've been slinging a lot of tent, which is like
content.
That's
what we should call this segment.
Content.
Slinging tent. I'm going to change it. For future reference.
And we have a few regular fans on our Instagram, I believe.
We do have some top fans, including my mother, and some great national fans from all over Australia, also international fans. I normally do get on the Instagram and do a lot of the slinging content. And I also make sure, you know, we're just like engaging with our audiences and whatever, checking out who's tagging us and things. And it's been really strained because we've been getting tagged in obscene photos.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, if they just tuned into the first part of this show, they don't think it's obscene. They're like, I'm sending content to the right place. All we've talked about is sex so far.
This is what I'm thinking. It was one of you two are using the Across the Park Instagram to do naughty things. That was my only thought and my only conclusion, that was my only theory, because it's very rude, like girls doing rude things, trying to get people to come over and say hello to them on their rude accounts. And so right. Why are we getting tagged on in that? And I think my only conclusion is that either you two scumbags have been stalking hotties on the web.
Well, here's the thing. I've got multiple Instagram accounts, right? Like, and you sometimes got to switch between them, and you forget which one you're on when you're looking at people and liking photos. So maybe I've been on the Across the Park Instagram and I've been liking other people's content.
Well, I've had to report the images of, like, pretty bad that I've had to report them. I've reported, like, multiple that they're spam and sexually inappropriate to Instagram. So they have been removed.
Right.
So if you want to check out some raunchy photos, just go to our tagged section.
Awesome.
Or if you just want to check out our really good hot content, then you can go on there. And we've got like past interviews and all sorts of funny videos. Speaking of which, actually, I didn't upload the great interview that we did with Quarantine Queen Sarah Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, an update. So we had an interview with Sarah Schwartz, who was did the mandatory quarantine for COVID-19 coming back from America. She was up in the Sheraton or whatever. So update is, I don't know if I told you, but she's negative on the COVID spectrum. She also got in the middle of the night in her Harry Potter pajamas a knock on the door, and a man in military outfit gave her a certificate saying, congratulations, you have passed your mandatory quarantine and your COVID test. And it was like a proper certificate.
Wow.
She just said it was the most bizarre experience to be in the Sheraton in her Harry Potter pajamas with a Navy SEAL, I don't know, whatever, whoever, some military man, give her a certificate.
Amazing.
So your civic duty.
That is so weird, especially just through the night. Just wait till morning, surely.
So bizarre.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well,
she's
done. Good.
She's staying at my house, so there you go. She's all
good. Oh, okay. Right now?
Yeah.
There you go.
Hot off the press.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you very much. Mick, any news this week?
I'm on holidays as of now. So I've just been finishing off everything at work and, you know, just having a real holiday, actually going away from the house. I'm very excited about it. I mean, Gab's been away from her house for months. So she's been like, it's a reverse holiday for her because she's now back at work. Yep. But I've been in the house for months and I'm just keen to get away for a week. So I'm going to Byron Bay, driving up.
Sound effects today, having clippity clappity clop on my horse and on my car.
I'm going to the border, the Queensland border, where I expect there'll be a wall and lots of guards, and going to be doing a handover of my wife from Queensland and New South Wales, picking her up, and then we'll go to...
Wait, slow down. What did you just say then? You're swapping your wife for what?
Are you swapping your wife?
Your Queensland wife? You've got a New South Wales wife and a Queensland wife, and you're swapping...
And the problem is we haven't been able to swap for a while, so it's...
That's why he's been looking up stuff on Instagram.
She's been up in Queensland looking after a family member. So she's now going to meet me at Tweed Heads and come to Byron. Okay. But she got allowed to go to Queensland. So she's entered the biosecure domain of Australia.
The biodome.
Imagine being stuck in Queensland forever.
I think we spoke about this last week. Yeah. We lost all our Queensland viewers or listeners.
Yeah.
Like, why would anyone want to get stuck there? No, come on. We're fond of you.
Other than that, no. Pretty boring week. I'm looking forward to running around football, like getting outside and doing it. But I don't know when it's going to start again, like actual sport. I know some people are doing it. Some people are training and obviously – real footy started again, so I don't know when community sport can start again. Anyone know?
No.
I think it's coming up. Like
maybe July.
A couple of weeks, right? I was reading something about it, but obviously didn't stick and I can't remember. So
it was something sports related and Gab went, nah, not thinking of memory of that one.
Nah. I've done my research for this week.
Yeah.
Gab, any news? I mean, you've given us a lot so far.
No, that's it for me.
That'll do.
I mean, cool. I've got plenty to talk about, but.
Yeah, what do you want to talk about?
Oh, no.
You want to get something off your chest?
No.
All righty. Well, we can move into sport then, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right.
May as well, I guess.
May as well. The NRL returned. Well, no, I used that last week. The NRL's been back for a couple of weeks now.
It's like it never left.
St. George Dragons coach Paul Mary McGregor has avoided the axe after his team's disappointing performance on Monday against the Bulldogs.
And so wait a second. Like, how can you just get axed just for doing what? Not a very good job.
So, Gab, every year it's like a poll or a betting comp to see which NRL coach is going to get sacked first. And, you know, every year a coach gets sacked because their team sucks. And it's not because they sucked that year. It's usually because they sucked for a lot of years.
Mm. Has it always got to do with a loss? Like, they've only just started.
Well, sometimes it coincides with a loss. You usually don't sack a coach the week after they win. It's usually after they lose.
I wonder if that's ever happened. That's the juicy thing.
Oh, probably has.
We need to find out.
Yeah. But the rumors are that McGregor is going to get the axe within the next month, let's say, if they keep losing.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, an emergency meeting was called on Tuesday, and everyone just assumed that was the end for Mary. Like, he was not going to coach again for Saints. And they came out and they're like, no, we're going to keep him on. He has our full support, which is never.
That's it. Usually, what happens as soon as the board says he's got the full support, the next week they're gone. That's generally the cycle of things.
So this has come after the Dragons' worst start to a season in 15 years. The Dragons lost to Canterbury, as I said, on the weekend, suffering their 14th defeat in their last 16 games, and now they're obviously sitting last on the ladder. And the only two wins in those 16 games were against the Titans, who are known
also for suck. Great who team. Won their first game in like a year or so, nearly
or just under a year. Of course, they had to beat the Tigers. Crap. But yeah, so the Titans again are a team that really aren't top of the table. So
unlike the Eels, who are the top of the table.
Okay, turn it upside down. They're not so.
Who's going to do that? Aaron McGregor will do that. You won't.
So, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with Paul McGregor, but it's not looking good. He does have 18 months remaining on his deal. Perhaps they just are afraid to pay him out. They don't have the money. I don't know.
Contracts mean nothing in rugby league. Nothing.
Uh-oh. Tell me about it. Mick, do we want to talk about Manly being robbed?
Oh, look, here's the thing. It may have been a forward pass. It may not have been a forward pass. But Manly scored two tries in that game that were not even tries. One of them, he didn't even ground it. Like, it bounced, and they still gave it a try. So
that shouldn't matter.
As with everything in rugby league, it all balances out in the end. It all comes out in the wash, and maybe you get a call this way, that way, this week, and then the next week you get a call the other way, that way. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
So whatever.
I'm just stirring. Won.
That's
I'm
exactly
stirring.
How I feel about rugby league. Whatever.
It's
our best start. It's our best start since 1989. So we're talking about, what's that, 31 years that since the Eels went 5-0. So I'm excited.
Who do you have this weekend?
Penrith, Panthers, Battle of the West.
Okay.
Tomorrow night. Tonight.
Okay, great. Broncos were humiliated after their record loss to the Roosters. 59 points to nil last Thursday. They were beaten. 59-0.
Let's lose some more Queensland listeners. All right.
Sorry. But that's like, I mean, that hurts. And they were at home, weren't they? They were playing at Suncorp.
Yes. Home crowd. Home doesn't matter anymore. It's like every game.
That's true. No, that is true. That is true. But they didn't have to travel. And the Roosters did. Roosters didn't have Tedesco. And they still did that.
What I really want is the referees on the field to have that like fake commentary in their ears, and they can turn it up and down, and they can still give crowd penalties when the crowd boos like really loud. The referees in the ground, must have done it wrong. But this is someone up in the box turning it up. Maybe not.
Okay. In NRLW, the ARLC confirmed on Tuesday that the NRLW would return with the four-team comp and the grand final would be played October 25th, which is the same as the NRL decider. Yeah. And the women's State of Origin will be held November 13 as a standalone match.
There you go.
Which is good.
Yeah, it's good. They didn't let their season pretty much is the same as the last couple of years. Unlike AFLW, unfortunately, had to chop their season short. NRLW should get at least a good run at the end of the year.
In AFL news, returning 2 weeks ago, of course, was the NRL, and now the AFL is back. It kicked off last night, although we're recording on Thursday, so for us it's tonight, with the Pies taking on the Tigers. Anyone want to add anything?
Big game. I mean, the big change in the AFL this year, and it happened in round one, was that they shortened the quarters. So the game is now 20 minutes shorter. AFL is now 20 minutes shorter than it was last year.
I think that's a good thing.
And there's always some commentators out there saying, well, yeah, we should keep it like this. Not only is it more exciting, they actually worked out that the better players are on the field longer, but it was too long before. I always thought the AFL was a little bit too long. Like it went for over 2 hours game time. It's about 100 minutes. So it's about the same as league, you know, maybe with stoppages and stuff. That's plus time on. Sorry, 16-minute quarters plus time on now. And it used to be 20-minute quarters. So you're talking about 16 minutes less a game. And they did it because of COVID, but the people are saying they should keep it like that for next year. So we'll see.
Okay.
I think that's, they'll have big games. We were talking about, it's always a balance to see which code is going to get the worst COVID breaches. Well, we're going to talk about the breaches.
Oh. The biosecurity alert.
That's a pretty poor sound effect too.
Breach. So there's been some breaching going down across all codes, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So Ollie Wines, who's an Adelaide player AFL, he recently did a media interview at his house for Channel 7. And now he has to go in isolation.
So normally in this
no, sorry, day and he age, might be breached. I don't think he's gonna. Yeah, yeah.
You have to do any sort of interview via Zoom. That's how it's done. Yeah, he's gone.
He did it on his back porch.
Just come to my house. Just come over.
It's a weird thought.
Bring the whole station.
This isn't as weird as Benji Marshall though. Benji Marshall was seen on the news kissing a reporter on the cheek.
Yes.
So Benji Marshall just walked up and kissed this reporter on the cheek and they all kind of were like, oh shit, we don't do that anymore. And so he was sent home to self-isolate and now the reporter has to go and get tested and Benji has to stay at home and they have to wait for the results and see what happens.
She has been, I love Benji, so she has been tested. I wish he kissed me. And she's tested and she's negative like nothing. So he's back now, but obviously like... Why?
But why doesn't he get tested? I guess he's already been tested.
Yeah, I think just get tested constantly as a player. All the time.
Yeah. And then an Essendon player, AFL defender, Brandon Jerk Thatcher? Don't know.
Jerk Thatcher.
He self-reported himself for breaching because of his living arrangements, which broke the AFL protocols. So I don't know what he was doing at home.
He invited a friend over to his house, I think.
And then he freaked out himself. Yeah, a friend, right. He obviously hasn't been reading the sex manual that the AFL developed the sex manual. Sex manual. It includes a swing. So he's been suspended, actually, from this weekend's game because of that. So
there's one more as well.
They've all tested negative for COVID.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, all of the players across all codes have weirdly tested positive for chlamydia. So,
Gab, you worked so hard for that joke. Like,
I shove it, then you kept interrupting me, little fucker.
I love it.
Thanks. Thank you. This is why I just want to remind listeners that we're doing this still, it's been months via Zoom. So
yeah, I think
we're
10.
Not in the same room. We can't actually quite bounce off each other like we normally do. Mick interrupting my jokes is a common.
I was going to add one more. I was going to add that Andrew Fifita's wife went to the Black Lives Matter rally last weekend and was then told that she couldn't see him because she had to self-isolate from her husband, Andrew Fafita. But anyway, that was the other one. But
Terry Lamb for the Bulldogs.
Actually, another, I just want to bring up quickly, a recent survey, a return to work and back to business study, right, came out. And it was really interesting. Up to 66% of respondents said that they wouldn't feel comfortable returning to a stadium to go and watch footy. Because I think it was nearly 90% of them thought that NRL was a total waste of time.
Jeez, Gab, you just
I knew it was takes coming.
Today.
Do you want to keep going?
No,
you're more. No.
The survey also found that 50% of people would not feel comfortable returning to work. I mean, that's not surprising.
People just want to stay the fuck home, but they don't want to code anywhere, obviously.
Yeah. And 90% of the people also believe that Mick is the dirty scumbag on the Instagram looking up
90%
future wives.
I'm 60% okay, certain.
I'm done with my percentages.
Rock. Thanks.
That was fantastic. In soccer news, Brazil withdrew its bid to host the 2023 Women's World Cup.
Which means
that there's only like four countries left, or technically us and New Zealand are one. So it's
because if New Zealand's going to allow anyone into their country ever again.
This is in 3 years.
I think Australia are definitely favourites to get the 2023 Women's World Cup. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
it would be so great. We have four different time zones if we're going to play from Perth over to New Zealand. It's going to work. All right, let's play a game because I've got a
Wait, can I just bring up one more thing? I was listening to the radio
Let me get the drum roll,
Mick was on because Mick also hosts The Drive on 2SER 107.3.
Oh, did you listen, Gab? Thank you.
I did, and you had a fall.
Yeah, I did have a fall. I'm all right.
A fall?
What do you mean? Another?
You're always falling. You're always falling over.
Really? What was my other falls?
When you ran to the show,
about how like you get to a certain age and then you're like, oh, Mick's had a fall.
Yeah.
You're going to hear on the grapevine, oh, did you hear Mick had a fall? And it's like, oh, yeah, he's not so good.
Anyway. You're okay, though? Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Okay. I hit my head at the other.
Did you? Oh, my God, that's quite bad.
Yeah, that's not good.
Concrete.
Holy shit.
My neck still hurts. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm not as bad as that guy who got pushed over by the cops in
America. That's awful.
Yeah. All right, a game.
Game. Cocktail or pony?
Wait, is this ponies? Isn't that porn star or pony?
What did you say?
It was the original. So the original, when I told you that we were going to do this show game, was going to be porn stars or ponies, but it got really hard.
I'm sure it did.
For making the game. It got quite difficult, so I changed it to cocktail or pony. So I'm going to say a name of either a cocktail or a horse, and you have to tell me which you think it is, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So Smarty Jones. Is Smarty Jones a thoroughbred racehorse and winner of the 2004 Kentucky Derby, or a drink made by combining equal parts scotch, sweet vermouth, cherry herring, and orange juice?
It's a pony, I reckon.
You both going home?
Yep.
Oh, Mick, that was actually quite good.
You both got it right.
Thing is that I know my cocktails quite well, Joel and Mick, so.
Okay. Let me try this one. Bamboo. Is Bamboo an American champion thoroughbred racehorse who was named after a horse featured in the children's fantasy novel The NeverEnding Story, or a cocktail made with 1.5 parts sherry, 1.5 parts dry vermouth, 2 dashes of something, and 2 dashes of orange bitters?
Cocktail.
Oh, bloody hell. Yeah.
Well, because everybody knows that Bamboo was not in The NeverEnding Story.
Who was the name of the horse in NeverEnding Story?
Atreyu.
Atreyu? Was it Atreyu?
I don't know. Is it?
No, I think Atreyu is the boy that...
Yeah, I think that's the boy. It does start with A, though, I think. It's like
Atrax. Atrax. Artax.
It's something like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, that's the end of the show. I like this game, and I'm going to continue it next week.
Oh, and don't forget, we need a new antenna.
Oh, for 2SER, yes. We did speak about this last week. Please give 2SER money so we can keep going to air. because we don't have an antenna.
We got hit by lightning, so support us and donate and go to 2SER.
Almost during our show, I think it was a sign.
Yeah.
Oh, was too.
Here's to another year.
God loves us. See ya.
Hey, Sporty.
Bye.
Bye.
I love how we wave, but nobody can actually see us.
Welcome to Locked In Science for another week. My name is Claire, and just like last week, I am still at my house, but joining you through the, I wouldn't say magic of technology, let's say through the science of technology. And today on Locked In Science, well, we've got Chris and Stu with us. Am I right?
Oh, of course.
You are.
And what have you brought us for another week of Locked In Science this week? Chris?
Well, Claire, we've enjoyed doing a lot of non-coronavirus stories in Locked In Science in recent weeks, but I thought I would come back to some COVID content because there's been stuff happening.
Yeah, sure. I mean, just like the virus, you know, it pops up and then it disappears for a while, but it's going to pop up again, right? And so must our vigilance in reporting about it.
And appropriately, this is a resurgence of a previous story. I don't know if you remember that back in the early days, I did a story about a drug called hydroxychloroquine that was being pushed by certain people due to some, I suppose, what looked like dodgy research from some independent researchers, like the private research organizations. Well, there has been more dodgy research from private research organizations. This time on the other side, studies claiming that hydroxychloroquine is dangerous. And it's been a bit of a debacle in COVID science. So I thought I'd have a bit of a look at that.
Always good to come back to a story that we've covered a little while ago and update on what we actually know.
We did promise that we would come back to this one. So, yeah, I feel it's appropriate.
Excellent. And, Stu, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I'm actually going back in time a little bit as well. I just was reading in the last week about some research in the field of CRISPR technology and some of the...
CRISPR obviously being the gene editing technology.
Oh, I thought it was the thing in the bottom of your fridge that picks the veggies.
That always, no matter how vigilant you are, it always gets manky after the after a couple of weeks, doesn't it?
Yeah, we need to. You could probably use CRISPR to develop new veggies that don't go manky in the bottom of the fridge, but that's not really what we're talking about. Basically, I'm looking at the medical uses of the CRISPR technology, and there's been quite a few sort of leaps forward in that respect, and trials and things going on in human subjects and stuff as well. So I'll just go over a little bit of the advances in that arena.
Well, it sounds like we have some updates for you this week. On with the show.
Okay, so yes, you're listening to Locked In Science, and we did talk about the drug hydroxychloroquine early in the pandemic, and particularly the controversy around hydroxychloroquine. That controversy is only compounded now, and I think it shows how we need to be cautious of science that is rushed out during the panic of a pandemic.
Sure, so and I mean, it was, I guess, brought into sharp focus because of a certain politician who was, I guess, made it a household name overnight, right?
That is absolutely true. And that the political aspects of this is what complicates the whole thing. Yeah, look, I think it's good to try and focus on the science, but yeah, the political aspects of it are what have made this an issue, I guess you could say. So yeah, to just give a brief recap. So this is the drug hydroxychloroquine that was pushed by President of the United States, Donald Trump, who called it the biggest game changer in the history of medicine. Always one to understate things, I suppose. So this was on the basis of some work by some French researchers who had published some small observational studies that claimed that this drug, which is an anti-malarial drug, been used for quite a while, that it was effective against COVID-19, especially when combined with the antibiotic azithromycin. So after, particularly after Donald Trump's exaggeration, it was, you know, taken up by a lot of people. The countries around the world made it their standard treatment despite a lack of good trials. There were people who were harmed by overdosing on it. There was panic buying that led to shortages for people who depend on it, because it's also used for things like treating autoimmune disorders like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. So yeah, it was a bit of a mess at the time. Since then, there's been further mess. There have been more studies, including some randomized controlled trials, which I will get to a little bit later on. But there's also been a lot more stockpiling by the likes of Clive Palmer in Australia, who took out, you know, full page ads in newspapers announcing that he was buying huge stocks for Australia. And Donald Trump recently revealed that he was taking it prophylactically, although he did recently also claimed he had stopped taking it, possibly due to the controversy that we're talking about today. Everything changed on the 22nd of May when a study was published in the medical journal The Lancet that showed that there was a greatly increased mortality in patients taking hydroxychloroquine. So this was another observational study. It combined data from 96,000 patients from around the world, and in their results, they said that 18% of those taking hydroxychloroquine died, compared with 9.3% in the control group. So that is a huge difference.
It sounds pretty significant.
It sounds very significant. Yeah, like it was kind of then jumped on by a lot of people with an kind of "I told you so," people who had been a bit skeptical of this particular drug. And it led to consequences like the WHO dropped the hydroxychloroquine arm of its big solidarity trial, which is investigating multiple treatments for COVID-19. Now, it is kind of odd to have such a big response, like a practical response to just one study. But I mean, we're talking about a fairly big difference in mortality here, as it sounds like. Still, though, that was also quite a strange result when you have this drug that has been used for many years for many other conditions, and the people generally thought is correctly would be safe, that it should actually make such a big difference in mortality. So perhaps that should have rung some alarm bells, you know, in the first place. Because people did start to notice some problems with the study, and notably looking at the close to home impacts of this, there was an investigation from the Guardian newspaper, and they found that the published article had reported 73 deaths from COVID-19 in Australia by the 21st of April 2020. In fact, there had only been 61 deaths in Australia by that date. So that was a little bit odd. They went and asked the authors about this, who responded saying that they had mistakenly included an Asian hospital in their Australian data, and so they issued a correction, but said it didn't really change their conclusion. It was still a bit of an odd thing, though, and especially because no one quite knew where the data was coming from, because, you know, the Guardian also contacted Australian hospitals, including the Alfred in Melbourne, who denied sharing their data. And it's one of the main hospitals treating infectious diseases in Australia. They denied sharing their data with the authors. So it kind of raised the questions of where this data had come from. So where it actually came from was from a private company called Surgisphere, which is run by one of the co-authors on the paper, a bloke called Sapan Desai. Now, Surgisphere is based in Illinois. It bills itself as a healthcare analytics company, but it was founded in 2008 mostly for publishing medical textbooks. But this 2020, it has had a huge kind of increase in profile because it has been one of the leading analyzers of big data on COVID-19. And yet no one can quite figure out what they're doing and where they're getting their data from and how they're analyzing it.
Is there a incentive for the researchers to be, I guess, transparent about where this data is coming from, and therefore, I guess, you know, this organization to be transparent as well?
Well, that's a very good question. There is an increasing push for transparency in medical research, because we are seeing people are getting very concerned about the quality of medical research in recent years. And yeah, there is big push for transparency. It's complicated, I think, when you have these kind of studies, which are big data observational studies. So they're using health records from around the world. And there's a whole lot of issues about contractual arrangements and privacy and this kind of stuff. It's actually very complicated, which itself is an odd thing, because this is a very small organization. The Guardian's research or sorry, investigation kind of indicated that it only had a handful of employees, this company. Not really any of them seemed to have a scientific background, and yet somehow it claimed to have these data sharing arrangements with hospitals from around the world, and no one could quite figure out which hospitals either. And in fact, this, it seems like the other authors on this Lancet paper who weren't associated with Surgisphere, they were also kind of started to question this. So they, after initially issuing their correction based on the problems that The Guardian had found, they tried to do an independent audit of the data, but Surgisphere was unable to provide the data in a form that the auditor could examine. And so they were forced to retract their paper, and it was retracted on the 5th of June. So that was just very recently that that work was, was pulled. So essentially, effectively, from the scientific point of view, we are back from where we were before the 22nd of May when it was published. The WHO has resumed its trials of hydroxychloroquine, and I think people are trying to pretend this didn't happen. But it does kind of raise a lot of questions, and it has other impacts as well. So, like, Surgisphere, this is not the only work they've been involved in. There was another paper retracted recently from the New England Journal of Medicine that looked at the effect of anti-angiotensin drugs on COVID-19.
Yeah, what's an angiotensin drug?
These are, I believe, are involved in like blood pressure medication, that kind of stuff. Yeah, and that paper was retracted as well. There's also some work they published on an anti-parasitic drug called ivermectin, which made a big splash in Latin American countries because this drug is used a lot in countries like Peru. And so it had been then kind of rapidly distributed because on the basis of research from Surgisphere's data. But again, that has now been called into question. People have noticed all kinds of weird things in that data too. And yeah, it's starting to seem like you can't really trust anything that they have put out. That's certainly to be the view that is going on here.
Sounds like a lot of red flags for that data set.
A lot of red flags, which kind of makes you wonder how this got through in the first place. So, like, one of the things we're seeing with the pandemic is there obviously is it's a lot of rush to get stuff done. There's a lot of rapid research. A lot of the recommendations being made by official, you know, official government organisations, they're being based now on preprints rather than published research. And yet, I mean, this study we're talking about, though, was not a preprint. It was published in The Lancet, which is one of the world's leading medical journals. It went through all the processes and, yeah, and seemed to have so many flaws. Now, you could argue that retraction is kind of part of the process. It's kind of how we correct the scientific record when there's been something wrong done, but we shouldn't have to deal with that because, again, a lot of harm can be done by this bad research getting out there in the interim. I mean, ultimately, there may not be any real damage done. There is still work continuing, research continuing on hydroxychloroquine. There have been a number of other studies published, including some randomized controlled trials. They generally show that it is, seems to be ineffective. They don't show the level of mortality that the Surgisphere data claim to show, though. But yeah, officially, they're still waiting on large randomized controlled trials to determine definitively whether it's effective and safe. But, you know, like the political aspect is interesting as well. I have seen people spreading theories on social media that the whole affair was like a left-wing conspiracy to bring down Trump, which I don't know about that. I mean, when you consider that The Guardian newspaper was kind of leading the investigation into the problems with this research, it hardly seems like, you know, you'd expect them to be part of the left-wing conspiracy is what I'm saying. I don't know. It's also an odd one because I can't quite figure out what game Surgisphere is playing in all of this. You know, like I said, they're a small organisation. They have greatly increased their profile, but it's not clear what they seem to do. Yes, it seems like their data is unreliable, but there's still data there, so it's not clear where they're getting from. They produced a whole lot of different kind of aspects, bits of research, decision tools and things. So there's a lot of work gone into this stuff. And even though it is not necessarily good quality, possibly, you know, even something made up, who knows, it's, you know, they're still putting work into it. So I don't know whether it is a scam to make money from their side of things, or whether they maybe they're just cutting corners, but they have good intentions.
Or maybe the perils of not enough time and a lot of pressure to be able to produce results in, you know, around sort of, you know, what is actually going to be the next big breakthrough to treat COVID-19?
Well, certainly from the people who are using their data, I would say that is what's going on there. But for them themselves, who are essentially selling their data or selling their research around the world, they've positioned themselves in this way. So they're an active player in this. And no one was asking them to do this. They've stepped up and done it.
Well, I guess there's a demand out there though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a demand out there. And this has definitely shown that there's a demand out there. But it just shows, I guess, that we need to be careful of these things. I mean, there absolutely is a lot of potential. People talk about the potential for big data, and certainly the idea that there are these independent research organisations that are doing stuff with this data. I mean, there is a lot of potential there, I guess. But you've got to remember, this is also what got us started on the hydroxychloroquine problem in the first place, was this kind of observational studies from independent organisations. So, yeah, look, it is such a bit of a shame that it seems like we can't necessarily rely on what's coming out from them, and we just have to be more careful of it. But, I don't know. I've been trying to find a moral in this story, and I'm not sure what it is. Just buyer beware, I guess.
So we've talked before on Lost in Science about CRISPR technology, which is a way of editing DNA to make permanent changes to genes and then basically put them back into living organisms. CRISPR actually stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeats. But I think I'll just stick with CRISPR for the duration of this story, because I'm not going to read that out every time.
Yeah,
it is a little bit easier to remember as well. So the actual technology itself is based on a bacterial antiviral defense system. So they basically found this in bacteria and then went, oh, hey, we can use that to do what we want to do with it. So they've altered it to target specific gene sequences and remove them or disable them. So some of the, you know, news about CRISPR has been quite controversial. There was a guy who, you know, injected himself with CRISPR-altered genes to try and make himself a superhuman of some description, who later regretted it, I must say. He came out later on and said that was a really bad idea.
Yeah, and no, there's also kidding.
Yeah, injecting yourself with edited DNA is probably not the smartest thing you can do with your time.
Some sort of aspirational Spider-Man there.
Yeah, it's the only way no one can get superpowers, really.
Yeah, pretty much. There's also the Chinese doctor who edited the genome of a pair of twins to try and make them have an innate immunity to HIV, who apparently this case has also been increasingly controversial. There's even more breaches of ethics and stuff in that case. So that's an ongoing debacle, basically. But the technology itself obviously has a huge potential for pretty much every field of biology and biological research. And it's likely to have an impact on everything from agriculture to medicine. And the number of CRISPR patent applications each year has been increasing since the technology appeared in 2012. And globally, there are now hundreds of patent applications awaiting approval. The first step to using CRISPR technology in medicine hinges on safety testing of the edited DNA and edited cells in human test subjects. And this seems like that hurdle has actually been cleared. So results published by a team from the University of Pennsylvania have shown that altered T cells are safe for use in human patients in the treatment of cancer. Now, unfortunately, the editing that they did to these T cells didn't actually have the effect they were hoping for, but the upside of it was that they've shown that it's actually safe to use this kind of technology in human test subjects. So that's good, even though, you know, the actual effect they were looking for didn't actually amount to much. And there were also, there were only three patients in that trial, but none of them showed any side effects after being treated with the cells. And the altered T cells survived and multiplied in all those patients. So they basically put living cells back into these people, and those cells then self-replicated. So that's a, you know, a big step forward. Now, boosting cancer patient T cell numbers has been a treatment for some years, but these CRISPR cells were boosted with cancer targeting genes, which was intended to make them more effective in locating cancer infected cells and sort of knocking them out. But apparently that didn't work all that well. So other researchers have used CRISPR technology to switch off genes that cause a congenital disorder, which causes blindness. And the disorder is called Leber congenital amaurosis 10. And basically they switched off the genes in these people's eyes that were causing the blindness. So it actually, they actually used the CRISPR technology in living humans inside their body. So that's the first time that's ever actually been done. So they edited the cells in their actual eyes and changed their genetics, basically.
Wow.
Every other sort of use of it has been they've taken cells out and edited them and then put them back in. Now, the issue with doing it when the cells are in someone's body is that they can't actually be sure that the CRISPR technology is not editing other cells as well. So there's a bit of a drawback in that they can use it in this way, but they can't sort of quality control. So when they've got cells in a, you know, sort of outside of the body, they can check each one and see that they're all edited okay, and then just put those ones that worked back into the body. If they're putting the technology into someone's body, there's not really any control over what it does once it's in there. So there's a bit of an issue with safety in that sort of respect.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, when you're looking at something like that, you know that the gene is responsible for a certain condition and you're fixing that, but that same genes may be doing other things in other parts of the body. So you kind of, I suppose, they just inject it into the eye in that case and hope that it doesn't spread elsewhere? I mean,
yeah, I mean, I guess that's pretty much what they did, is what they sort of went, well, we've got to switch it off in the eyes, so we'll just introduce it to the eyes. But it is a, you know, it is an active technology. It's not something that just sort of disappears. It may actually move to other parts of the body as well. So CRISPR is also being used to treat other inherited genetic disorders, for example, sickle cell anemia. So sickle cell anemia is a blood condition which does actually confer some resistance to malaria in the people who have it, but it's also really, really bad as far as it reduces the amount of oxygen that gets carried in the blood and things like this. So basically they have used the CRISPR technology to switch on a gene to make an alternate form of hemoglobin in the blood, which is only usually present in fetal humans. And they've gone, oh yeah, we can actually switch that gene back on to make this different kind of hemoglobin. And then the people suffering from sickle cell anemia get more oxygenated blood because they're producing a different kind of hemoglobin, which is pretty amazing, really.
Right. So that's more like a workaround rather than, fixing the gene that's responsible for giving the sickle cell anemia.
Yeah, that's right. They've still got sickle cell anemia, but they've actually got an additional production of hemoglobin that allows them to have better lives, basically. So it's also being investigated for use in xenotransplants, which is where transplant organs are taken from non-human donors, like pigs, for example, and transplanted into humans. So they are using CRISPR editing to downregulate genes that cause immune responses in humans that would cause the organs to be rejected after the transplant. So they're basically, you know, using the CRISPR technology to edit the pig's DNA so that then the organs from the pig is then less likely to be rejected from the human recipient. And this is potentially useful for providing livers and hearts, which are always in short supply for these kind of transplant operations, but also potentially maybe able to provide corneal transplants, which will cure some forms of blindness, and maybe even replacement islet cells, which are the cells that produce insulin. So people who have diabetes, which is type 1 diabetes, may be able to have transplanted islet cells, and they'll be able to produce their own insulin, and then they won't be, you know, reliant on injecting insulin again. So, yeah, you know, this CRISPR technology has just got such a huge potential for solving a whole lot of health problems that really have no other solution, because they are genetic health problems, they're inherited health issues. And obviously these kind of medical breakthroughs get a lot more of the headlines, and they get a lot more news written about them because people are concerned about their own health. But the applications of CRISPR technology is so wide and far-reaching. I think every other industry to do with living things, CRISPR is going to have impacts on our lives directly in the future.
Time for on another episode of Locked In Science. This week, Locked In Science is normally recorded in the studios of 3CR, but is recorded right now in Chris, Stu and Claire's own homes on the lands of the Kulin Nation, with the kind support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation and broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Please get in contact with us if you would like to have a chat, tell us what stories you would like to learn about. Maybe you want Chris to do another hydroxychloroquine update in a couple of months. He's probably going to do it anyway, so why not let us know? You can find us at lostinsight@gmail.com, find us on Twitter, or you can just tune in again next week when Stu, Chris and Claire get lost.
Yellow moon has punched a hole in the night time. I climb through the window and down the street. I'm shining like a new dime. The downtown trains are full with all of those Brooklyn girls. They try so hard to break out of their little world. They have nothing that will ever capture your heart. They're just thorns without the rose. Be careful of them in the dark. Only if I was the one you chose to be your only one. Trend. street and past your gate. Stand by the light at the four-way. You watch them as they fall, and they all have heart attacks. They stay at the corner.